Thank you so much, President Austin, for this opportunity and for this honor. And I can't tell you how special it is for me to be here today and to receive this honor. It's a pleasure to join friends, family, faculty, as we celebrate the graduation of the University of Connecticut's class of 2006. Congratulations! All right. Congratulations. I know you have waited for this day for a long time, and I do hope you will savor every moment of it. I'm so honored to have this chance to speak to the class of 2006, and with predecessors including historians like David McCullough, activists like Noam Chomsky, and public officials like my former boss and colleague in the Connecticut Congressional Delegation, United States Senator Christopher Dodd, I know the standards are high. I thank you for the Honorary Doctor of Laws. You should know, in the tradition of full disclosure, I always wanted to be a tap dancer. That's what I wanted to do. My mother said you need a much more secure and stable profession, Rosa. Not politics, to be sure, but one that led me to the law, a doctor. She is 92 years old, and finally, the security of a doctor of laws. We both thank you, and I am honored. Before I begin, I'd like to say thank you to some of those who have helped today's graduates reach this proud day and realize their potential. First, let me thank President Austin and the Board of Trustees, particularly the Chairman of the Board, Dr. John Rowe, for this honor and for their leadership here at the university. Long among the state's leading schools, this university has always been a beacon of opportunity for Connecticut families. From humble beginnings, with a faculty of three, today UConn is enjoying a true renaissance as one of America's premier institutions of higher learning. This is a school that attracts the best, including dozens of our state's high school valedictorians. But more importantly, it produces the best. From the next generation of researchers, scholars, and business leaders to some of the most exceptional basketball talents we have ever seen. And so, I say many thanks to all of the UConn faculty whose commitment has made that possible by teaching, challenging, and shaping today's graduates, particularly this year's Board of Trustees, distinguished professor Sally Reese Renzulli. The class of 2006 arrived ready to learn about business, healthcare, education, agriculture, the arts, and the sciences. Whatever their area of focus, they depart 4 years later, for some perhaps a little longer, poised to make a difference. They have you to thank for that. Let me also say a word of congratulations to a few friends who are graduating today. Daniel DiStefano, Adam Della Ventura, Jennifer Ortiz, as well as a few who have interned in my Washington office, John Hudak and Justine Simiski. You have all made your families proud. I also want to say to you, Matthew, you delivered just poignant words. Thank you very, very much. Also, we congratulate David and Rhoda Chase, not only for their honorary degrees, but also for their inspiring commitment to our community and our institutions. Continuing a tradition the Storrs brothers began 126 years ago when they offered the state of Connecticut 170 acres of farmland. The Chase's story is about obligations to society, to immigrant values, and how we bring those values into the public sphere. So thank you both. This is a special day, and college graduations are always a remarkable occasion. And for the students, it is a day filled with conflicting emotions. There is the adrenaline that has left you sleepless and bleary-eyed and probably not a little worn out from hauling family members around these last few days. There is also the nagging feeling that you may be leaving behind some of the best years of your life, a time in which you learned from others, but more importantly, you challenged yourself. Indeed, one of the great things about college, and particularly a state university like UConn, is that you have no choice but to be challenged. In your time here, each of you were faced with new ideas, new cultures, new causes, new communities, many of which did not make sense to you at first. Along the way, you embraced some of these ideas and discarded others, but not before you weighed their merits and determined whether or not they were right for you. And now you are wondering if you are leaving all of that behind, not simply your friends, but also the environment and communities in which you felt you could take those risks and face those challenges. For parents, graduation day is something very different, the day in which all of your hard work has finally paid off. Sending a child to college is exciting, but never easy. For most of us, it is the first time our kids are completely on their own, free to make their choices, to succeed or fail. In that sense, it is the first real test of our parenting skills. None of us will ever forget that first time our son or daughter came home after that first semester of college. That anxiety-filled moment during which we wondered whether we would even recognize our child when he or she arrived. And frankly, that feeling never goes away. It never gets easier because you never really know how it is going to turn out. But as parents, all we can do is try. We do the best we can. So to the parents and family here today, I say congratulations. You sweated it out together, but you made it together, and together you have earned this moment. For sure, the hard work does not end here, nor does the anxiety. As nurturing an environment as UConn has been to all of the graduates today, I hardly have to tell you that the world out there is very different from a college campus. Indeed, many of you are already looking for the next community, that next place in your lives where you can build new friendships and safely explore new challenges and intellectual pursuits. Perhaps you will be lucky enough to discover these things at a job that allows you to make a living focusing on your passion. Perhaps you will find a new circle of friends that stand by you should you not succeed the first time out. Regardless, the real world would push you in a very different direction than college did. Indeed, where college dared you to take risks and face problems head on and supported you when you did, the world out there is much less supportive and much less likely to reward risk and chance. You have the option of your iPod and tuning all this out. This is not to say all of you will choose to do that, but the temptation will be there. And can you blame those who do? As Americans, particularly those with a university degree, we are blessed with so many choices in life. How ambitious and how brave will we be when we face an ever-growing world of choice? Now, earlier I said to you that I wanted to be a tap dancer. Well, I really did get a job as a go-go dancer after I finished school. True story. I didn't share that with my parents because education opened up a world of choice that they could never imagine for themselves. My mother worked in a sweatshop on a sewing machine, making pennies and putting collars on men's shirts. And she would make me come to see her every day at work, and her message was clear. Get an education Make choices that will give you a better life than this. I do not exactly know what choices led me to my current course, but I do pause when I am in the United States Capitol and stare at the statuary. Jeanette Rankin, the first woman to serve in the Congress, Henry Clay, Benjamin Franklin, Daniel Webster, men and women who debated and decided the big issues that created this great nation. So I do pause and ask, how is it that I get to join those debates today? I am very, very blessed. And for many, particularly those arriving on our shores today, that sense of possibility and opportunity that my mother instilled in me still defines us as Americans. And now, with the explosion of technology and the internet, the most remarkable communications tool the world has ever known, Americans have more choices than ever, more freedom to live our lives as we please. But increasingly, we seem to be using those freedoms not to tackle our toughest challenges, but to look the other way. We look at tragedies like Hurricane Katrina and the Sago mine disaster or the war in Iraq, and we shake our heads in disbelief. We look at the rapid ascendance of China and India on a global stage at the same time. We consider the rising cost of college, stagnant wages, and the rising number of families without health insurance here in this country, and we feel helpless. At the same time, with gas prices at $3 per gallon, we wonder how we will ever break that deadlock that has left our country so dangerously dependent on oil. And that is to say nothing of the threat of terrorism, which has changed our lives in countless ways. Indeed, as a society, we know we have big challenges facing us, but increasingly, we seem to lack faith in our ability to tackle them together. Why is that? Well, some would say cynicism. But even more than that, there is a growing sense that the institutions upon which this country was built are letting us down, from government to the media to the nation's corporations. For sure, it began a long time ago with Vietnam and Watergate. But that notion seems to be magnified today as Americans are bombarded with story after story that reinforces that mistrust. Pension mismanagement at companies like United Airlines and Enron, corruption and incompetence in government during Katrina, and conflicts of interest that compromise a free and independent media that has guarded our nation's liberties for more than 200 years. And the result is clear. Despite the fact that an overwhelming majority of us do not want this and seek a new direction for our nation, including, I imagine, many of you, most Americans feel disconnected, powerless to do anything about institutions they built to better their lives and better their country. That feeling informs a number of views, from broad perceptions about public officials and corporate executives, that they are all in it for their own personal gain, to pessimistic beliefs that our retirement savings will not be around for us when we retire. And often these views fly in the face of the reality. For instance, Social Security, the most successful retirement program in history, has not once missed delivering a check in 7 decades. And many politicians and corporate executives bring strong ethical principles to their professions. But together, these views make for a public discourse that is often ugly and uninviting. And more importantly, they hold back what we can accomplish as a nation. They discourage our participation. And if we are ever going to answer the call and face our challenges, I believe we will. We will need to turn that around and stop playing it safe. For all of this, we are a nation infused with so much possibility, resources, and talent. There has never been a challenge America has not responded to with creativity, with energy, and with determination. And as history teaches us, responding starts with accepting the fact that we have a role to play, no matter how small. As Eleanor Roosevelt once said, freedom makes a huge requirement of every human being. With freedom comes responsibility for the person who is unwilling to grow up, the person who does not want to carry his or her own weight. This is a frightening prospect. And so today, I ask you to turn off your iPods for a moment and think about the stake that you have in the challenges that we face. I ask you to not simply accept that responsibility, but to embrace it with that uniquely American spirit that affirms our belief that even in an environment of mistrust and of indifference, big solutions are possible. Just recently, we have seen how true it is. Massachusetts, Republicans and Democrats have come together to provide universal health coverage to every resident in their state, an idea not long ago many of us thought virtually impossible. And like all things related to health care, the plan is complicated. But it is based on a simple premise that instead of reimbursing hospitals for treating the uninsured, they could be using that money to help families purchase health insurance. What unites people of differing views around this plan in Massachusetts, from Governor Romney to Senator Kennedy, is not any particular idea or methodology, but rather the goal. In this case, ensuring that every family, regardless of income or background, can afford health care. And if Massachusetts can do it, there is no reason in the world why other states cannot follow their lead and take on the same challenge. How did they do it? To start with, they believed that it was possible. And just as importantly, they realized that it was up to them to tackle this problem. With rising health care costs, endangering American competitiveness, as much as they are putting pressure on individual families, the various stakeholders realized that providing health care to every family was a matter of shared responsibility, a matter of the common good. Indeed, pursuit of the common good is a powerful aspiration. As part of a rich Catholic tradition in which I was raised, I was taught that we realize our dignity and rights in relationships to others, that we grow and achieve fulfillment in community and have a broader social commitment and responsibility to contribute to the good of the whole society. But working toward the common good does not have to be a matter of religious faith. Nor is this a plea for altruism or looking beyond our self-interest. To be sure, the reasons to fight for the common good are, at their core, almost disarmingly practical. Because when we take some responsibility for what happens in this civic sphere that we call America, we know from our history that all of us will benefit. That is what has sustained us through our country's most difficult moments. It is what motivated the millions of women who worked in factories and shipyards during World War II. It was what inspired those who marched on Washington with Dr. King during the Civil Rights Movement. It was the driving force behind the millions who donated their blood in the aftermath of September 11th. And there are so many challenges before the country that require us to get back to thinking that way. Not only the crisis in our healthcare system, but also the need to strengthen our public schools, to protect our air and water, to bring our troops safely home from Iraq, to name only a few. And one of our biggest challenges is moving our country toward energy independence. We know about the problems our dependence on oil has created, from skyrocketing gas prices to global warming to leaving us reliant on some of the most volatile areas of the world right now. But even as our dependence on oil is holding our country back in so many ways, What excites me about this issue, one of the reasons why I have made it a priority for me in the Congress, is that sense of possibility. This is one big area in which every American understands the stakes for us as individuals and as a nation. Just think about what we can accomplish by drastically reducing our dependence on oil through technologies that draw upon renewable energy sources like wind and solar and biomass. And frankly, lower gas prices is just the starting point. Right now, we spend more on importing oil than we do on education, on housing, and on homeland security in this country combined. $200 billion, which is a third of our annual trade deficit. But reaching energy independence is not simply a matter of freeing up financial resources, but rather of unleashing human capital and potential on an unprecedented scale. Just imagine the opportunity if we charge our farms with helping us meeting this challenge. Instead of paying them to grow less crops, which is what we do now, they can be growing the crops that we need to make biofuels and other alternative sources of energy. And it is not just farms. Connecticut is a leading developer in the fuel cell technology, and New Haven is but one community with a fleet of fuel cell buses in development. With these technologies, critical sectors of our economy, like manufacturing, would no longer be as reliant on materials made from petrochemicals like plastics. Imagine the economic boom these technologies could bring to America. They could spur our economy on a scale that would rival the 1990s with the Internet. We could spread our nation's wealth across the country, to the Midwest, to the South, to the Pacific Northwest, and here in the Northeast. We could bridge the cultural, economic, and social divide growing between rural America and other parts of our country. There may be no bigger solution than reaching energy independence. And believe me when I say to you that land-grant universities like UConn, which provide so much of this critical research, will have a big role in helping us to reach that goal. And when it comes to us getting there, your participation will be so desperately needed. Whether the issue is energy, ensuring we have enough nurses in our hospitals when the baby boom generation begins to retire, lowering the cost of college tuition so that millions more like yourselves can get a degree, or helping working parents balance the pressures between work and family with affordable childcare, we need your engagement, we need your energy. Solving these problems are not only matters in which we all have a stake, but also so much to gain. Indeed, they are about making America as strong and vibrant a force in the 21st century as it was in the last. And so I challenge to you, and I put the challenge to you today, don't solve the crisis we face in America's hospitals or schools, though I hope some of you are going to play a role in those efforts. In fact, it's not about solving any one individual problem. Rather, my challenge to you is this: restore our belief that we can accomplish things together in this country, whatever your path in life. Leave room to participate, to help us pursue goals rooted in the common good, regardless of whether the solution takes place in the public or private sectors, at the grassroots or in the corporate boardrooms, on your turf or theirs. Help us transcend our differences. We have the resources. I look out at this crowd today, and I know that we have the talent. We are brimming with it. And unlike any other country on this planet, we have this Constitution, which gives America the freedom to control its collective destiny, just as that diploma you are about to receive allows you to control yours. Such choices are never easy. As Eleanor Roosevelt said, they make a huge requirement of every human being, of each of us. If my own experiences have taught me anything, it is that bringing your values to the public sphere is not a matter of expediency, but of moral and civic obligation, a call I hope each of you choose to answer. So again, I offer the class of 2006 my congratulations. I wish you the very best as you embark on the next stage of your life. There is no doubt in my mind you will bring a new meaning to the famous UConn charge. And with that, let me get you on your way. Go Huskies! Thank you. Thank you for this honor. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. God bless you. God bless you.
Well, I may be in.